Accession number 30638, Mr. Peter Wayne, Reel 2. Now, I think the next thing then is how you come to go to school in England. What is the background to the family? It was a family decision, I presume, for you to leave in 35.
Yes. I have a younger brother who was still at school in Germany. He only followed me in 1938. But my parents, first of all, I went to Switzerland for a brief period where we had friends.
Now, what were you doing in Switzerland?
I went to school there to improve my French.
What do you remember about that?
Well, it was sort of heavenly. I was only there for a relatively short time because my parents were trying to find a school for me and the financial arrangements and all that.
So but when would that be? 34?
35.
That was 35. Yeah,
35.
And whereabouts in Switzerland was the school?
In Lausanne.
Lausanne. And what do you remember of that? I mean, was it a school?
It was very short.
A Swiss school?
It was a Swiss school, and we had a wonderful time. In the winter, we went. I wasn't there for all that long, but we went to Verbier. I remember skiing in the winter, where there was one little hotel and a couple of chalets. And Verbier is now a huge town, and that's how times changed. This was 1935. I learned French. I learned to smoke cigarettes, and I learned to play tennis.
So that was 35 to 36, wasn't
yeah,
it?
Yeah.
So what next then?
Well, next I of course went back home because the school itself was not academically the sort of thing that it was. Institut pour jeunes gens. It was an institute for young boys. They did follow the not the English A level, the matric, and they did follow the German Abitur, which is the other exam, but it was not specialized in that. My parents decided you must get to England, and we had friends already.
And why not France? Because you've been learning French, you've done France,
yes,
French,
yes,
in Switzerland. Why,
yes,
not France?
Well, it was the decision was that England. Everybody was very pro-English, and by that time, quite a few of our friends had emigrated to London, and this proved very valuable later on when the borders were closed. And they sent me. It was also difficult to have a French school. My French was not brilliant; it was school French. My English was very, very poor when I arrived in England, but my parents managed, through the Society of Friends, the Quakers.
Tell me how they organized it first. Which school did they pick? Did they pick it for you?
They picked, there are four or five Quaker schools, all in the north of England, and I went to a Quaker school where we had already the son of my parents' friends as a pupil.
Now, where was this Quaker school?
The Quaker school was in Great Ayton.
Ayton.
Ayton. It's in the Cleveland Hills. It's near Middlesbrough in Yorkshire.
Why the Quakers? Because you weren't Quakers. I mean, why then?
We were not Quakers. The Society of Friends, and if I might digress a little bit, did more. They are a small, not a sect, but a small community of people who have done more for the Jewish and racially persecuted refugees than any other organization. In proportion to their numbers, they are we are now, if I may digress, trying to have the Society of Friends, which is their proper title, added to the Yad Vashem in Jerusalem as a memorial to the enormous effort they did, they made to get and allow children to come. We paid our school fees, but they admitted us, and later on, when my parents couldn't send any money out, they kept us.
Now, what about the journey over? Do you know what month you came over?
I came over on a German steamer from Hamburg to Hull. Hull being the nearest town.
And when was that, roughly?
I can tell you the exact date. It was the 1st of May, 1936.
And how did you feel? You were on your own, or did one of your parents come with you?
I was on my own. And I was met by the headmaster in Hull, very kind old, he was probably 55-year-old, yes, Quaker. And we communicated somehow. After all, I did have some English. And he took me to the school, introduced me to everybody. And I had Peter Lasky, who was, one of my friends, or our parents were friendly. I slept for the first time in my life in a dormitory with 22 boys.
What was the school actually called? Did it have a name?
No, it was called the French School. The French with the capital F, The Quakers are actually called the Society of Friends with the capital F.
And what was the setup of the school? How many boys?
It was actually, in those days, quite exceptional. It was co-educational. We were kept well apart from the girls, apart from playing for some sports. We were joined together, but some of the classes, the fifth and the sixth form, we had girls in our classes, as they have nowadays as well. It was a boarding school. The discipline was strict. We had to go to a meeting in the morning on Sundays for two meetings. The Quaker form of worship is to sit in complete silence. And I used to work out mathematical problems. So I did enjoy going to Quaker meetings. It is more, there is, there are no priests. You sit in a sort of square, and up from time to time one of the elders got up and was moved by a spirit to say something which was sometimes quite profound. No, I must say they were happy days. I was homesick, of course. But
how badly? Tell us a bit about that, because you'd be 16, 16, 17.
16, yes.
How bad was the homesickness?
The homesickness was aggravated by the fact that I had my parents in Berlin. We read the newspaper. We were taught history in a different way. And we suddenly realized that the First World War was really lost by Germany and not by being stabbed in the back by Jewish Bolshevism. I relearned history there, and I was worried about the way. I remember writing very cautious letters without reference to anything political to my parents. And my homesickness, I do remember it very clearly, was not that I wanted to go back to Germany, but I wanted them to come out.
Now, how did you get on with your fellow pupils? And did you encounter any juvenile anti-Semitism amongst the British, or was that stamped on in a Quaker school?
A very interesting question. We had, of course, a great mix of children. A lot of them came from farming backgrounds because it is farming land up there. Some were children of officers who were posted abroad. I did not come across any anti-Semitism except from one boy. His name was Eric Brown, and he, in 1936-37, had somehow obtained anti-Semitic leaflets, which were definitely, I wished I had kept one or two of them, which were issued by the British Union of Fascists, Sir Oswald Mosley's gang. And he used to show them to me, and they were very pro-German and pro-Nazi. And I remember having arguments with them, but I mean nothing violent. Or that was the only, there was one boy out of, well, we were 150 people, out of 85. Other than that, I found there was no bullying.
Did you advertise the fact you were Jewish? Because you showed me...
We had other Jews.
You were blonde and you didn't look particularly Jewish. No. If that can... I mean, that's an awful thing to say, but you said it yourself.
It was not a question of being Jewish or not Jewish. The Quakers insisted that we followed their, their religious... way, which was of course Christian. I mean, we used to have to get up and stay and be silent before we could sit down and eat our meals. But there was no way any discrimination. You mustn't forget that the Quakers themselves are pacifists, and the bulk of our teachers were conscientious objectors in the First World War. And they weren't treated very nicely. I know my French master, who was absolutely charming, and he sort of, you know, the German boys had no parents. We were invited to tea, because don't forget, they all lived in the village and in the school, the teachers. So their wives used to invite us over and gave us a very warm welcome. And but in the First World War, my French master was imprisoned. I think it was in Durham prison. They just locked them up. They treated them more gently in the Second World War.
Now, how did you do at school? I mean, how quickly was it before you grasped English? I mean, it's quite not easy.
Again, a very relevant question. The first, to answer the first question, there was a financial situation. My father had obtained, again, through the Jewish Refugee Committee, because, you see, we were regarded as Jewish because we were persecuted because of our 75% non-Aryan blood. He had obtained sufficient money to send over, at an exorbitant rate of interest, however, to pay my school fees, which were £30 a term, full board. I remember that. But there was, of course, a time limit, and my parents said, "No, for God's sake, please work hard, get your matric at 17, university entrance, but we got enough to keep you there. The Quakers would have kept me anyhow, but do try and get your matric within a year of being there." So I already, having wanted to become an accountant, sat down and worked out, what do I do? The amazing thing was that our German school, my German school, was superior in teaching methods, and we were well advanced. So I looked at the curriculum, and I found that I was well ahead in mathematics. I was well ahead in French, and of course German was a gift, you see, because that was my language. The things I concentrated during that year was English language, English literature, and history, because we were taught completely different historical events.
So how did you do? I mean, did you pick up English quickly?
Yorkshire, if you like, I use e-bagum. Yes, English is not a difficult language. I had this background, and being involved with nothing but English-speaking people, teachers and pupils around me, I did pick it up quite well. I do remember I had a nickname. Of course, I was called Dieter Wolf in those days. They couldn't say that. They called me Dieter. And then they decided they called me Yellow Jumper because I could not say Yellow Jumper. So Yellow Jumper was my nickname. But it was all extremely pleasant. I mean, I can... Would you like to hear the sort of story of a young boy?
Yeah.
Well, I arrived and I wanted to ingratiate myself with my new fellow pupils. So one evening, one of the boys said, look, we were always hungry, by the way. I don't know why, but we had a tuck box. One of them said, look, Dieter, or Yellow Jumper, would you go to the fish and chip shop? This was after lights out. And get 8 portions of fish and chips, which cost 2p at the time. And the boys gave me the money. I went down on the fire escape steps from the dormitory, crossed the village green, and purchased that steaming hot load of fish and chips. I returned to the school. Everything was in complete darkness. I mean, we weren't locked in, it wasn't. I climbed up the fire escape. The window was open. I crawled through the window, saying, I'm back. Complete silence. As soon as I set foot in the dormitory, the lights went on. The duty master appeared. He used to sleep next to the dormitory. Well, so there I was, and the fish and chips were confiscated, and I remember the words of the master, he was a science master, and he, of course, I was the guilty party to some extent, although the boys put me up. It wasn't very serious. I wasn't severely punished, but he said to me in his broad Yorkshire tone, you are not just a wolf by name, you are a wolf by nature, in his Churchillian voice. That was one of my episodes, which I remember, but basically it was all very, very pleasant. We had, during part of my school, some boys from the Basque country, because that was the time when Franco... of the time of the Spanish Civil War. And they were refugees. And they were taken in by the Quakers. There were only 2 or 3 of them, but they were then housed in a hostel nearby. We had one black boy who was marvelous at sports, and there was no discrimination whatsoever. I think he must have been Jamaican. He spoke very good English, anyhow.
So what happens next then? You're there. What about holidays? Do you go back to Germany or not?
Yes. I had then... I was befriended by one of the boys. He became later on my very best friend. And his parents, who lived in Darlington, used to take me during the holidays because I couldn't always go home. My parents were still in Berlin. My little brother was still in Berlin. I used to spend the holiday with the Hardys, but I did go back in 1937. It was Christmas 1936. Berlin at that time, just during the Olympic Games, wanted to give the very best impression to the world at large. They had removed all the anti-Semitic slogans from the streets, newspapers. Very, very clever. All done by Dr. Goebbels and the propaganda ministry. You know, you can't have 80 different nationalities in a town for the Olympic Games and have anti-Semitic slogans and that. They didn't want to offend anybody. Things had calmed down. And again, we were lulled into a sense of security, which was, with hindsight, of course, a great mistake.
So you'd spend some holidays in Germany, holidays in Germany.
Yes, I took my friend back to Germany. He was very impressed by everything. His name was Douglas Hardy.
Now, so what happens next then?
I went back to school. I took my matric.
How'd you do?
In July, I got 6 credits with distinction in German. And I was therefore... I was quite happy to... I went back to Darlington.
So that's 1937?
1937, July 1937, when the results came out. And I then decided to become a chartered accountant. In those days, it was not a university course. It was, you had to be articled like solicitors.
Now, was the plan for you to do it in England, or were you thinking of going back to Germany?
No. I was still, my parents in the meantime made efforts to get my brother out, who came out actually in January 1938, to the same Quaker school where I was.
So what do you do? How do you get yourself articled?
Again, it was my good friend who and his parents who virtually adopted me for the school holidays and afterwards. They had an accountant, and I met him, and he met me, and he said, "Well, I will be pleased." It was a small firm. You would be my first articled clerk, but excuse me. Your parents have to pay a premium, which was the usual thing, which we pay you back at the rate of 5 shillings a week during the term of your articles. I did become articled. His name was Mr. Gregory.
And he was Darlington, wasn't he?
He was in Darlington, had a small office. And a number of interesting clients. One of them, there were lots of British railway company, London North Eastern Railway. And another one was Catrick Camp, the officers' mess accounts. That was my first contact with the British military. I was very impressed as a 17-year-old boy to see the gorgeous dining room at Catrick Camp, the officers' mess with all the silverware. And we used to do the audit of the mess accounts, the officers' mess accounts. And we were actually allowed to sit on a small table in the officers' mess, not when they were dining, to have our lunch. These were my earliest experiences with accountancy. And I then got, I made very rapid progress, and I had always said that it is much better to be articled to a small firm where you have all aspects of taxation, executorship, auditing. Whereas if you work for a very large firm, you may be engaged in just ticking off invoices for a couple of years. I made good progress. I enjoyed my time, darling.
You were living with your friends?
No. I had then decided I could manage. I think my parents had managed to send £10 a month, which was ample. I still kept books about my expenditure. It was £85 for a whole year.
So where were you lodging?
It was Mrs. Paxton opposite the football stadium of Darlington. I became a great supporter of Darlington. They never managed to get better than the third division. But I really felt very, at that stage, you know, being fluent in English and all that, I felt very much at home, except for this constant nagging worry about the family.
Now, what about, because as you sort of going through these years, you started, things start getting worse again in Germany, moving towards Kristallnacht and things like that, which is 30s.
Yes, November 1938. Yes.
Were you getting news from?
Yes.
Or were they allowed? I mean, were they censored? Would they tell you what was happening? Or
no, but I must say the British press was in those days quite liberal. I mean, one of the finest newspapers that I've ever read was the News Chronicle. Alas, no longer. And they used to give you very full details of what was happening. But you see, it was also gradual. It was not until Kristallnacht, which you mentioned, life was bearable.
Now, so what happens next? How long were you working there as an article clerk?
Well, I was articled until 1940. I was articled until I came back from the war. Theoretically, they had expired, but. I lived quite happily in Darlington. I didn't want to dwell on it. I was studying, of course, studying and trying to pass my intermediate. But I was stopped short of that because in 1939 we had to go before a tribunal.
Now, hang on. So what did you hear of what happened to your family and your father's photographing film at Kristallnacht?
Yes,
it would have been a target.
Yes, yes. He had the shop on Kristallnacht. They actually had gone to Hamburg, and the shop. But he had removed most of the stock. But in 1938, on Kristallnacht, he closed down the premises, and my parents had gone to Hamburg. To some friends, because they did arrest a lot of people, of course, it put them in concentration camps, and then actually discharged them if they could emigrate. I had made.
Was his shop wrecked? I mean.
Well, it was. The windows were smashed, and but he closed it down after that. My parents had made efforts to come to England, and this was a very, very sad aspect of our emigration. My father tried to come over as a professional, and I, as a boy, 18 years old, tried to get him as a partner into one of the photographic studios in Darlington. I was very friendly with Darlington was a small town of about 60,000 inhabitants. Everybody knew everybody. But the Home Office did not allow anybody to come unless they had a watertight guarantee or a guarantor. Our friends, our English friends, were not gentlemen worked. Father worked for the Darlington Rolling Mills, and although we were really good friends, he was not prepared to sign a guarantee for my father, who was at that time already near approaching 60, you see. He said, you know, Peter, I do anything I can, but I cannot sign this document. He was a bit paranoid about it. I then got a guarantee eventually from my father. But my mother, who after Kristallnacht had a nervous breakdown, came over to England almost illegally as a domestic servant. They did not normally allow women to come who were married. They only wanted single women.
So your mother came, but your father remained.
My father managed. He stayed behind, waiting for his British visa.